This is what I'm speaking on today. A message to Brahmanas everywhere. Among Hindus in general, here in India, I'm in India. The word Brahmana is generally understood to mean, very straightforward thing, someone who's born in a Brahmana family, in the Brahmana caste, and then they'll have a name, a surname, a designation. I made a list of a few I could think of. There are many: Mishra, Sharma, Dvivedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, Chobe, Dvivedi, Dube. Then in Bengal we have the Chakrabarti, Bhattacharya, no, Chakrabarti and other parts of India also. Bandhopadhyay, otherwise known as Banerjee, Mukhopadhyay, otherwise known as Mukherjee. Then here in Tamil Nadu, we have the Iyers from the Smarta community, the Iyengars from the Ramanuja Vaishnav community. Then general names, Acharya, Upadhyay, Pujari, Vyas in Orissa, Dash is a Brahmin name. In Bengal, it's a Shudra name. Vajpayee, Yagyik, Bhatta, and there are so many. So if people have these names, you can understand they're Brahmin by caste. And mostly the Brahmanas, they prefer to marry within their caste, which is true of most castes in India today. And then we get the Christian Brahmanas coming out of Goa, whole bunch of Brahmanas converted to Christianity, and still they remember they're not just Christians, but Brahmana Christians, and they marry within their own community, and so on, and so on, and so on. Now, within our ISKCON around the world, a Brahmana, we understand a Brahmana to mean someone who got what we call second initiation. They're initiated with a fire sacrifice. They're not from any caste. They're what would traditionally be called mlechas and yavanas, but they're initiated and they get a thread and they're called a Brahmana. There was a lot of opposition to this previously in India. Nowadays, not so much. It's still there. Still, Westerners in general, non-Hindus are not allowed in. There's still some temples in India, most notably the Jagannath Temple in Puri. Of course, Muslims can go as long as the priests don't, and because if they go in their shirt and pants, no one can understand that they're different from any Hindus. I know at least one Muslim who went in the Jagannath Temple, but you can't tell the difference. In both cases, people who identify themselves as Brahmanas, born in Brahmana families, or initiated in ISKCON as Brahmanas, they tend to think, and other people tend to think, that because they went through the ceremony, either we have what is called Brahman initiation in ISKCON, or Upanayanam in the Brahmana caste culture. Because you went through a ceremony and someone has a certain string on their shoulder, that they are a Brahmana. But actually, neither understanding is correct. It's not simply that by sitting in a ceremony, one can be should be considered a Brahmana. It's something like someone may be born the son of a doctor, which means he has maybe a better chance of becoming a doctor than someone who is born in another family, but it doesn't mean he's automatically a doctor. Or even if one enters the medical college, you're still not a doctor. Someone who is trained, whatever background they come from, someone who's trained as a doctor is recognized by other doctors for his ability to act as a doctor and actually acts as a doctor, such a person can properly be considered a doctor. Although someone who's entered medical college and studied for a little time, they may be able to bluff people that they're a doctor, but they're not actually a doctor at all. So similarly, someone may be born in a Brahmana family and have gone through an Upanayanam ceremony and have some idea of the culture, Brahminical culture, and maybe studied a few books, something like this. But he's not really a Brahmana in the old traditional sense. Traditionally, in Brahmana families, one has to study. After the Upanayanam means that one is there, after that, one is qualified to be taught Veda. And then one, to be a Brahmana, one actually has to study, not just by the ceremony. There's a verse, Janmana Jayate Shudra. By birth, no one can be considered a Brahmana in the true sense of term, because at birth, a child has no developed discrimination, no developed knowledge. So by birth, the child of a Brahmana and the child of a Shudra and the child of even a dog or a cat, they're pretty much on the same level. There's no developed knowledge or discrimination or intelligence. Janmana Jayate Shudra Sanskarad Bhavet Dvija. Now by the samskar, by the ceremony, the Upanayanam samskar, the word samskar means more than a ceremony, but just for this context we'll say, who's been through that ceremony, they may be called dvija, they've had their second birth. By the first birth, one is hardly more than an animal, but by the second birth, it's considered the second birth, in which the father is the guru, and the mother is the Vedas. We say Veda Mata. The mother is. Then, Sanskarad Bhavet Dvija, Veda Partet Bhavet Vipra. Then one can be called a Vipra, which is more developed, if one actually studies and recites the Vedas. That's why there are names like Dvivedi, means someone who has fully memorized two Vedas. Trivedi, three Vedas, Chaturvedi, four Vedas. Still, we're there in Mathura, especially the Chobe community. There is very well known the Mathura Chobes. It's supposed to be Chaturvedi, but hardly you'll find among them one who knows even one Veda. So, although conventionally they may be called Brahmanas, but then what is it? Janmana Jayate Shudra Sanskarad Bhavet Dvija. Veda Partet Bhavet Vipra Brahma Janatiti Brahmana. One who knows what is Brahma, they can actually be called a Brahmana, which means to come to the spiritual platform. Brahma, the term Brahma, can mean the Vedas, one who knows the Vedas, but it's particularly the subject of Brahma is discussed in the Upanishads. Which is concerned with Brahma Vidya. The Vedanta Sutra begins the first aphorism, Atato Brahma Jignyasa. When one has been through many, many lifetimes and through many, many disciplines, when one has become self-controlled, when one is following all the Vedic injunctions, when one understands that repeated birth and death and the whole concept of material enjoyment is not one's real self-interest, then one should inquire into the nature of Brahman. And one who understands this can be called a Brahmana. It's not simply someone born in a Brahmana family. As we understand from the Chandogya Upanishad, in the story of Shvetaketu, who'd studied and he came back to his father, born in a Brahmana family, and thought he understood. But he didn't. And then his father, seeing him very proud, Uddalak, his father, and then he instructed him in Brahma Vidya, in what is Brahma. So one who knows what is Brahma, such a person is a Brahmana in the true sense of the term. From Bhagavad Gita also, we have a definition of what we, Lord Krishna gives the definition of what we can expect in the character and the life of a Brahmana. Shamo dama tapasho cham kshanti arjavam eva cha. Gyanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavajam. One who is peaceful by control of the mind, by control of the senses, who undertakes tapasya, self-accepted or prescribed by one's guru, austerities meant for purification, tapo divyam putrika yena sattvam should yad yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. That's described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerities, by which one can come to the platform of Brahma Sukh, spiritual happiness, which is eternal and unlimited. So tapa, shocham, cleanliness. This is discussed in Gita and elsewhere. There's cleanliness of the body, cleanliness of the mind. For that one has to follow various rules, yama, niyama. These are all things which brahmanas know. Shocham, kshanti, tolerance. One should be able to, that's discussed at the beginning of Gita, one should be able to tolerate heat and cold, shitoshna, sukha dukha. One should not be elated when there is happiness, nor depressed in an adverse material situation. Samadvam yoga uchate, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. One is equipoised in all situations, samadvam. So such a, he's able to tolerate all different conditions, even when he's insulted and this and that. Kshantir arjavam, sincerity, straightforwardness, non-duplicitousness. Then jnanam, one is supposed to have knowledge of the what is described in Shastra. And vijnanam, that means not just book knowledge, but one should be able to practically apply this in life. That also refers to aparavidya, paravidya, the knowledge of this material world and knowledge of the spiritual. And then astikyam. This is most important. A Brahmana must be fully grounded in, with full faith, in the Vedas and Vedic knowledge. So it's a very high standard. And previously in India, Brahmanas were very highly respected, not just by their birth, but because they were trained in this. It was trained in this and in this whole culture, by which they would develop these qualities. And they had tremendous knowledge, detachment, self-control, and they're very, because of this, they had very, very strong spiritual power, and they're very highly respected, and properly so. So simply to say that someone is a Brahmana by birth is not accurate, and simply to say that someone joins ISKCON and they get a thread put on them, that's also not accurate, because one should develop all these qualities. It's actually a very, very high standard. And that's why Brahmanas, they're known as Bhudevs. Bhudeva, God on earth. In the rest of this talk, I'm particularly going to be addressing, this, after all, a message to Brahmanas everywhere, because now Brahmanas are not just in India. There are so many in Silicon Valley, in America, using their good Brahmin intelligence for writing software and other things. So I'm particularly going to address those who are born in Brahmana families, what is called a Brahmana family. I am born in a Mlecha family, that you can understand from the white skin. Your forefathers would have had nothing to do with me. But now many Brahmanas by birth are employed by the very Mlechas who they wouldn't even accept. Even previously, if a Brahmanas accepted employment from anyone, they were considered not proper Brahmanas. But nowadays, you can say due to circumstances or whatever, many Brahmanas are very proud to say, I'm employed by a multinational corporation. And practically speaking, myself and many other persons coming from Mlecha background, just realistically speaking, live more like, our lives are more like those of traditional Brahmanas than are most people born in Brahmana families. For instance, rising early during Brahma Muhurta, studying Shastra, chanting mantras. I'm not saying this out of pride, but it's out of a sorrow. Out of sorrow that I can say that I probably know more Gita shlokas than most people who call themselves Brahmanas do. I wonder how many Brahmanas know even how many chapters there are in Bhagavad Gita or that even has chapters, and what's the general subject of each chapter. I doubt if most Brahmanas know. So, Chaturvarnyang Mayashrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasaha. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the four Varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, among which Brahmanas are considered the highest, not arbitrarily, but because of their high level of culture and spiritual knowledge. But Krishna says this is due to one's guna and karma. If one has the quality, shamo damas tapasho cham, peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, and so on, as mentioned in the Gita and elsewhere, if one has these qualities and actually acts as in that quality, then one should be considered a brahmana. And if one has the qualities and of a kshatriya and acts like a kshatriya, then he's considered a kshatriya. Hardly there are real kshatriyas in the world today. Even there are many brave people fighting or soldiers in various armies, but the real kshatriya who can lead society brave with all powerful qualities, who's very intelligent and at the same with very practical intelligence, how to administer the people for the benefit of the people, under the understanding he's a servant of God, who's courageous in battle, he can fight and lead men, he can make decisions, he can recognize who are true intellectuals and talk with them also. He's not just some ruffian who's a fighter. Such kshatriyas, unfortunately, the society, the way it's made nowadays, produces, the educational system produces useful idiots for working for multinational corporations. And even the brahmanas, they're turned into people who can only think of getting a job. That means someone who works for someone else. And there are many people in the world who are like that, and they're better off like that. But it's not that the whole society should be shudras. And then there are the vaishyas, whose natural tendency is to do business, to protect cows, krishi, agriculture, krishi go raksha vanijam, that is mentioned in Gita. agriculture, cow protection, and trade are the natural propensities of the Vaishya. So if someone is born in a Brahmana family, but doesn't act like a Brahmana, and someone is born in a degraded family like my own, I'm not saying anything against my parents or siblings, but just culturally from the Vedic perspective, it's a degraded family I was born in. If someone like myself acts like a Brahmana, then who should be considered actually a Brahmana? This topic is discussed by Sri Narad Muni, we'll find in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam, where he says, Yasya yal lakshanang proktang pungso vana bivyanjakam yad anyatrapi drisheta tat tenaiva vinyadishet. If generally, Narad Muni says that although it's generally expected that someone born in a Brahmana family will be a, he doesn't say that, it's implied. Someone who's born in a Brahmana family is a Brahmana, someone born in a Kshatriya family is Kshatriya, someone born in a Vaishya family is Vaishya, someone born in a Shudra family is a Shudra. But if we find that someone has the qualities of a different Varna, even though they're born in one Varna, but they have the qualities of another, they should be considered belonging, actually, in the true sense of the term, belonging to that Varna. So if you find someone who's born in a Shudra family, but actually has the qualities of a Brahmana, in the realistic sense should be considered a Brahmana. And even someone who's born in a Brahmana family, but has the qualities and acts like a Shudra, then in the most realistic sense, they should be considered a Shudra. Now, I'm not saying that to try, again, I'm not saying that to try to put anyone down. I'm not saying, I'm better than all you so-called, I'm not saying that. Actually, I have very, living in India most of this life, I do have very great appreciation for the Brahmanas. And still today, there are many, not so many, but there are many who really are doing their very best to try to live as Brahmanas in the traditional sense, despite all the constraints and restrictions of modern society. And we find them, such Brahmanas, especially in here in South India, we find in Srirangam, Tirupati, Kanchi, Udupi, Melkote, there are places where people are really trying their best to live as traditional Brahmanas. In North India, you'll find also in Varanasi, in Rishikesh, there are. And it's difficult. The modern society has made it very difficult to live as a real Brahmana, but still some are really doing their best and they're really tremendous, I mean, really highly respectable people. And I didn't, Kanchi, of course, they're the Vaishnavas and the smartest followers of Shankaracharya. So even though philosophically we as Vaishnavas have a deep, long-standing and very philosophically based, deep differences with the followers of Shankaracharya. But at the same time, on a cultural level, we have to respect so many Brahmanas, especially the followers of Shankara, who are really following as best they can at the present time. Unfortunately, many of the, what happened in course of time, that even though the Brahmanas were highly respected for their purity, for their knowledge, for their religiousness, but in many cases they stopped following and they demanded respect and donations on the basis of birth, and in some cases, it seems in many cases they were very demeaning to lower castes, and so the respect was lost and people turned against Brahmanas. This is even going back to the time of Lord Buddha, whose movement got traction not only because of his teachings exactly, but because in one sense it picked up because it was an anti-Brahminical or anti-caste movement. In West Bengal, so many Brahmanas, because there's a whole history of how they were upstaged by the Kayastas, and then many of them became communists and atheists. During the rule of the Bam Front, the communist rule in Bengal, they had a deliberate policy they trained the children in the schools to attack and sadhus, anyone going as a sadhu, to be actually physically violent to them, because they're saying that all the sadhus are cheaters. And similarly, here in Tamil Nadu, there was a period with very great difficulty, but when there was a whole movement, anti-Brahmana movement, which was adopted by a certain political party, which the tide is turning, and the same political party politics, and now they're trying to show they're very religious. But they went through very difficult times, the Brahmanas, who tried to stick to their own culture. So it's a great thing for them, those that did so, despite so many difficulties, they have stuck to it as much as they can. In Salem, in Tamil Nadu, there's a center of ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which I'm connected with. And there we have a young man, it means he's around 30, something like that, Umasudana, which I thought was a very strange name. It's Umasuta, the son of Uma, which means Ganesh or Kartikeya. But when I heard, I thought Umasudan means the enemy of the enemy of Uma, but it's Tamil pronunciation. Anyway, I spoke with him through an interpreter, because he speaks Tamil and Sanskrit. He never learned English. He was raised in a traditional way. He went to the Sanskrit college in Chennai, and who's studying there? Brahmanas from his own background, smarter background, and Brahmanas from all Tamils studying, also were Vaishnavas. Both Vaishnavas in Tamil Nadu means mostly Sri Vaishnavas, followers of Ramanuja, and also some followers of Madhvacharya. But their culture among those, they're raised still today in the culture. They don't learn English. Some of them may, but they're raised with Shastric studies in traditional parshalas or gurukuls, and there are many in North India also. There's just like they have that, what's it called, Paramarthi in Rishikesh. They train the boys to be Karmakandya Brahmanas. So what I'm saying about Umasudan is that the culture among those boys who are studying in that college is that, just like Umasudan, he'd never been to a cinema in his life. He doesn't know anything about it, not interested in it. He's interested in Sanskrit studies. So still that culture is going on. Unfortunately, many have lost their culture when they go to the West, or even here in India. There are families of Brahmanas who are in Bengal and Orissa, they're fish eaters, the Brahmanas. And nowadays they eat everything, maybe not beef, but otherwise chicken, mutton. And there are some Brahmanas who traditionally They eat meat. If you, Kashmiri Pandits, they're famous, but they traditionally they eat lamb and mutton. Mutton in Indian English means goat's meat. Maybe you can say because of the harsh winter climate, what are you going to do to eat? But at least here in South India, and if, among many North Indian Brahmanas also, it's they couldn't imagine eating meat. A Brahmana doesn't eat meat. But many who come from such a background, they now they're eating meat and drinking, whatever, wherever you're from in India, for a Brahmana to drink alcohol is completely taboo, but drinking alcohol has ended also. And very unfortunate, drinking, smoking, and then you'll find people from very good Brahmana families. They're doing their worship, but what are they worshipping? Some Sai Baba, and really, really something their forefathers would not approve of at all. Worshipping some supposed, what is it? Supposed to be avatar or whatever it is. And above and beyond that, you can say maybe due to circumstances, so many Brahmanas became very materialistic. Real Brahmanas, they're not greedy or lusty. Then just their culture, the culture they're raised in, they're self-controlled, they're dignified. They live for the good of others. Actually, Brahmanas, they're supposed to be teachers. There are different kinds of Brahmanas. There are cooks, there are pujaris and those who do yajnas, and there are those who give spiritual instruction. But at all levels, a Brahmana is supposed to be doing good for others. As a pujari and doing yajna, they may be doing karma kanda, but it's for the good of others. When they do fasting and austerities, it's not just for their own spiritual advancement, it's supposed to be for the good of the world. So this there is a stereotype of the greedy Brahmana, but actually Brahmanas, and up to the present time, there's so many who they're not living a greedy materialistic life, but they want to do good for others. These are the best. These are real Brahmanas. They're still there. Some of them, practically. In the Brahmana families, we find that intelligence very high, which is maybe one reason why you'll find so many in Silicon Valley. They're, because you have to have good intelligence to be able to do the kind of work that's required in Silicon Valley. And I'm not talking about cleaning the toilets. I'm talking about writing software and all these kind of things. So even though so many Brahmanas, they are deviated from their culture, or it's come down, it's watered down a lot, they can naturally revert to that original culture because they have a natural inclination to want to do puja, to want to chant mantra, however fallen they may be. They have that natural love for Shastra and that culture of respecting the elders and respecting the gurus, respecting the cows, and that culture is naturally, not just for Brahmanas, for pious Hindus in general, but especially for Brahmanas, love of Shastra. Quite frankly, this is my observation. You can say it's subjective, but even though in the West we're making Brahmanas as an emergency, because if the Brahmanas of India are not going to teach spiritual culture all over the world, someone has to do it. It's like a battlefield commission. When the officers in the battle, some officers are killed or injured, then on the spot, the general may make some enthusiastic and dedicated foot soldiers. He may say, okay, now you be an officer, you take charge. So it's like that. But the what I see, the West, the devotees from the West who are initiated as brahmanas and maybe trying their best to do what they can, but that natural cultural heritage they don't have. They don't they don't have an understanding of the sacredness and the authoritativeness of Vedic Shastra, or even the ability to imbibe the subtleties of the very deep subtleties of Vedic philosophy, and even the standards of cleanliness and everything. It seems very unnatural for them. So my message to brahmanas everywhere, especially talking to those who are brahmanas by birth, it's time for you to reconnect with your culture, at least to some level, the best you can. If you're not already doing it, I think most are doing some kind of daily puja. I would hope so. You can do it. If you're not doing it, do daily puja. And actually, brahmanas especially, they're supposed to do Shalagram puja every day, Shalagram Shila. You should start to do that. If you have Upanayanam, you have the right to do Shalagram puja, at least according to the minimal formality. And Shalagram puja doesn't take very long. It can be done very simply. You can do it very simply. I see even today there are brahmanas by caste who 6 days a week they have to rush off to work, so they do a simple puja 6 days a week. And on the Sunday when they're free, they do elaborate puja for 2 hours or something like that. So take your puja very, that's something all brahmanas should do. You can reconnect with your culture, start doing puja. Don't worship Sai Baba, please, because that won't help you. And your forefathers, they never did, and they could have never imagined such a thing. Worship Vedic deities. Krishna, best. Some of you are from Shaiva families, whatever it may be. But worship a Vedic deity. If you're going to worship Shalagram, then you have to have Tulsi. So you have to keep Tulsi at home. Even if you can't keep Shalagram, and at least keep Tulsi in the home. Every Hindu used to keep Tulsi in the home. It doesn't matter what caste. It's most auspicious to keep Tulsi in the home. You can do arati daily for Tulsi. You can worship Tulsi. Even if you're in talk about Silicon Valley, that's not very warm like here in South India, Tamil Nadu. If you go to Seattle, there are so many Brahmins up in Seattle also. It's cold up there. But you can still keep Tulsi if you make some arrangement in your home. Very auspicious to keep Tulsi in your home. So you can do that. Say the Gayatri Mantra. Many boys, they say the Gayatri Mantra for a little time after they've had Upanayana, and then they just stop it. Actually, after Upanayana, you're supposed to go to a Pathshala. Who does that now? Nowadays, Upanayanam, it's often clubbed with the marriage because it's expensive, it's a social affair. It's nonsense to do Upanayanam when they're 29 years old and getting married. But anyway, if you do daily, you can do 3 times a day. You can take off midday. Muslims, they're given time for their namaz. The full Sandhya Vandanam, you may not be able to do, but at least you can do Archaman and Upanayanam. Gayatri Mantra chanting. You can do that. If the boss says, you can say, well, if Muslims, you give 10 minutes or whatever, and if you can give 10 minutes to me for chanting. You don't know. You have to see what the boss says. But if you assert that Muslims have the right to take 10, or if you can do it in your lunch break, they give you a lunch break, don't they? So you can do it. Take that up. Daily chanting of Gayatri Mantra. Teach your kids Gita verses. Let them get some culture. Instead of reading so many nonsense things, read spiritual literature and real spiritual literature. I'm talking about shastras, Gita, Bhagavatam. These things you should read, not these. There are so many so-called spiritual things, just some pop spirituality like this, you know, Osho or Sadhguru, or just some nonsense things that people think about and they put it in a book. Go to the real shastra. Brahmanas are meant for studying shastra. Study Gita, but don't study it with a bona fide commentary also. The best books for people in the modern age are Srila Prabhupada's books, because they present the Vedic philosophy. They give the Sanskrit verses, they give the word-by-word translation, so you can even learn Sanskrit by reading that. All Brahmanas should know Sanskrit. And the Vedic philosophy is explained in a very amenable manner that everyone can understand. So excellent books, whatever Brahminical background you're from. If you study Srila Prabhupada's books, you'll get it's this original Vedic knowledge given in a format which is relevant to the modern age. And you can chant Hare Krishna. That's the best spiritual practice of all. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Many people gave up their Brahminical practices with the criticism it was just some ritualism. If you don't know what you're doing, then why should I sit down and chant Gayatri Mantra? It's just a ritual. But chanting Hare Krishna brings us immediately to the spiritual platform, which we can experience. It's the best process for this age, for Kali Yuga. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasceva, 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 Gatir Anyata. In this age of Kali, there is no other way, no other way, no other way for reaching the ultimate goal than chanting the names of Hari, chanting the names of Hari, chanting the names of Hari. And all traditional sampradayas will accept this. Vaishnava, Smarta, they all accept the Shastric conclusion that chanting of the holy names is best. That's why we'll find, even today, we find Smartas and Vaishnavas, mostly retired people, chanting Vishnu Sahasranam. But you get all the effects of Vishnu Sahasranam chanting very easily in the Hare Krishna mantra. So that's the best process, which brings you immediately to the spiritual platform. And practically many people from Brahmana background, whatever they may be, Iyer, Iyengar, Smarta, Dvivedi, Trivedi, so many are coming into ISKCON because they're finding it has the real spiritual culture. It's not some cheap mumbo-jumbo pseudo-spirituality. There are rules. The rules that Brahmanas traditionally followed, everyone in ISKCON has to follow. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. So it's a genuine spiritual path. And actually, you people from Brahmana background, you should join with us and help us to preach the genuine message of Bhagavad Gita all over the world for the benefit of everyone. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Bharata Bhumite Hoilo Manusha Janma Ja Janma Shata Kari Karo Para Upaka. Especially people who have the good fortune to have a human birth in the land of Bharat, they should make their life successful by spiritual practice. And do good for others. Do good for others doesn't mean hospitals, schools, all these kind of things. Well, it's doing good, but not in a permanent way. Hospitals and schools, yes, they should be there. But really, the highest benefit one can do, para upaka, the highest benefit is to give people atma gyan, knowledge of who we are in our eternal relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course, ultimately, it doesn't matter whether you're Brahmana, non-Brahmana, or whatever, but I'm just addressing here Brahmanas, because your family background is most conducive for religious life. We don't have any bars or barriers or preferences. Just although I myself wouldn't be in this Krishna consciousness movement if there, because traditionally I wouldn't be allowed anywhere near any Brahmanas by birth. And it wouldn't be allowed in their house, any such thing. But it's open to everyone. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. It's open to everyone. Mam hi parthavya pashucha, yepi syuv papa yoniha, striyo vaishastata shudras, tepi yanti parangatim. Krishna says that whoever one may be, one may be of sinful birth, one may be woman, Vaishya, Shudra, if they take full shelter in me, they can go to the supreme goal. So it's open to everyone. But in the next verse, Krishna says, King Puna Brahmana Punya, Bhakta Raja Shayastata, Anitya Masukam Lokam, Imam Prapya Bhajasvamam. So Krishna says, then if people who are less expected to take to pure devotional service, if they can attain this supreme goal, then what to speak of people who are born in pious Brahmana families or who are Rajarshis, the highly spiritually and materially qualified Kshatriyas who are devotees of Krishna, who in this material world where everything is temporary, they worship me, Krishna says. And then that this is at the end of the ninth chapter, and then Krishna concludes the ninth chapter by saying the verse which we'll say again at the end of his instructions of Bhagavad Gita, which really is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. It's not sarva karma palatyaga, as some people say. The real essence of Bhagavad Gita is giving up all the fruits of one's work. No, that's not. The real essence is manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mang namaskaru. Mame vaishasi yuktvaivam atmanam matparayanaha. And Krishna says the same verse with a little difference at the end. He says, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, so he says, yeah, it's the end of the ninth chapter, so it's halfway through, and then at the end of the 18th chapter, he says the same thing, which is, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me. In this way, you will be fully linked with me. You will come to me by being fully attached to me. So this is open to everyone. And especially today, I'm appealing to the Brahmana community to combine with us and help us to spread the teachings of Bhagavad Gita all over the world for the benefit of human society, which really, really, really so much needs spiritual knowledge now more than at any other time. The whole situation is very, very bad. India has the knowledge. India has the culture. It's not for India only, but it has traditionally been cultivated in this land. Let us spread it to everyone for the benefit of the world. Please don't take offense at anything I've said. I'm not intending to offend. I'm just trying to speak as I've heard from my own spiritual master, who himself was not born in a Brahmana family, but was certainly worshipable for his immense spiritual position, his compassion for everyone, who is the highest Brahmana in the truest sense of the term. So on his behalf, as he has ordered, I'm simply trying to present this and request you to take it very seriously. Take up your spiritual practices. That's a beginning. And if you want to come with us, very good. Otherwise, at least worship Shalagram in your home, keep Tulsi in your home, chant the Gayatri mantras, pass it on to your children. This is my request. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya trinakang padayo nipatya kritvacha kakushatameta dahambravimi. He sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad gauranga chandra charane kuruta anuradha. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mokaro na vayang vichare yamaha. Hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama natama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.